And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 784. We're here to recap the week 27 fab briefly, talk a little bit of news if it really matters, give our 2026 first round predictions. We'll see how that sticks as the offseason goes along. Maybe look at some schedules and much more. It's the final episode of the 2025 season for myself on Twitter at BDIndrick and my co-host this whole season and hopefully beyond this on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Tid, we made it. How are we doing?
Doing great, Bubba. Yeah, as long as you want to keep having me back, I'm always down. But I was going to say, we finally made it to the end. Six days of games left because it's Tuesday now that we're recording on. So it's today was like Monday, though, because there's only three games yesterday. So a lot of decisions could be made today still. I kind of made sure I was done yesterday. But so I didn't really do any tweaking tonight, luckily. So I don't know if you did anything like that. But I figured just get all the thinking out of the way and don't overdo it in the remaining 24 hours.
The only tweaking I did is I put Wyatt Langford back into some lineups because I had him out initially because he's been banged up and I didn't know if the Rangers would push it type thing, but they had him in. Good matchups against Minnesota. We're rolling, seeing where that goes. Other than that, it's pretty much everything I put in Monday's stuck for now and see what happens. It's going to be a roller coaster. We were talking before the show, like a lot of teams are resting guys already to start the week, let alone we'll see what the second half of the week brings and much, much more. But it doesn't matter for me as much because I'm just hanging around. You actually have more important decisions to make. So one last update. How is the Ben 10 main event going on for the listeners?
It's floating. Last week was bad on the hitting and the pitching side, I was telling you. And so each week I jot down my weekly team stats just to for my three main events. I do it for all three of them just to see how they're doing. And for like historical reference, if I ever want to go back and look at things. But I had my first sub 200 average week for my team last week. I think I started last week at 488 hitting points in the main event, and I was at like 350. Average points. Excuse me, I had 408 points on average, and when I looked last, it was like 350. So I dropped like 200 points in the overall standings. Went from 4th to 13th, but it's all right because, like I was telling you, it's a little bit harder than the overall, but and also with average like that too. But I feel like if you can lose that much in a week, you can gain at least some of it back in a week. So I'm just optimistic that all my guys that went for 20 can now go 8 for 20 or 7 for 20 this week and kind of make up what I lost. But it's still pretty close. But if I finish top 10, it's not top 4 necessarily, but it's still pretty. I mean, even if I were to finish at 13, it's still pretty good anyway. So I can't really complain. It's just with 2 weeks left for my team to tank like that, all at the same, like everyone tanked at the same time. It was just brutal luck. So luckily I've learned to kind of handle my fantasy baseball emotions pretty well. So I wasn't going ballistic or anything like that. It's just like, what am I going to do? I couldn't have switched out my entire team going into the week.
You are a stronger man than me. Let's put it that way. I feel like I'm also at the point, like, what can you do? You just got to set it and kind of pray, as I told you earlier. It's all you can do. But you put the time in. So hopefully they have a big week. I know you keep Ryan and I posted in our dailies texts and everything. And we've been rooting for you and struggling with you at the same time as it goes along. But we have a lot of friends in that competition. So it's good to see a lot of familiar faces going for the gusto in that one. Well, going for like the top, you know, third through 10th, I guess, because 1 and 2 are pretty much on their own little, you know, pockets right now.
Yeah. The overall in the main event is definitely locked up.
Yeah, it's pretty much settled there, but the rest of it's open. Like, we got Slezak's doing his thing. You got Petra Ziello in the chat. Yeah, the guilds, many others in their Santu and company. So good group, like you'd expect in that setup. And we're hoping you crack back into that top 10 with a monster week. So we will be keeping posted and hopefully next week have a nice update on that one when things are all said and done. All right, just real quickly, like I said, we have a couple news and notes. If anything, this could help you in your daily leagues, I guess, because weekly you're pretty much hosed. But Ozzy Albies on Monday night left after a bad swing where he injured his hand. He has a broken hamate, and he's obviously out for the season. He'll have surgery, so he'll have plenty of time to recover. Nacho Alvarez has been playing actually sneaky good for the Braves over the last couple of weeks. Not a guy that I've usually had on my radar, besides being able to say Nacho. But other than that, I don't have a whole lot here. You'll have Nacho probably getting a lot of reps. They call it Brett Wisely, former Giant. Anything interest you here is just more of a – Albies looked like he was starting to figure it out and just kind of gone now.
Yeah, you mentioned at the start of the show that we're going to do a first round – we're going to draft the first round for next year at some point in the show. And my only thoughts for Albies are for next year, because I was wondering as the season was winding down if I would be in on him last or going into this upcoming year, because I didn't draft Albies anywhere in 2025. I did fab him in a main event when he was dropped. The main event wasn't good, so I was just taking a shot on see if he could bounce back. But once I saw the swing, I figured it was Hamate, and sure enough, that's what it was. And his teammate Matt Olson had that injury when he was on the Athletics, and I know it sapped his power. But what happens with the Hamate bone. It tends to affect power for whatever reason, like the first year back. I also know how long the recovery is for it. So I don't know if Albies should be past that come 2026, but any benefit of the doubt I was going to give him, I might not be giving him anymore. So when it comes to once projections are out and you hear hopefully news, I know people always get the spring training. Then you find out, oh yeah, he was hurt with this or he had surgery on this. Hopefully it's not the same case with Albies, but I'm definitely not going to be too optimistic on a bounce back. I don't think it like I potentially was thinking about before. So kind of stinks for him.
Yeah, from what I remember, because Pablo Sandoval has broken both of his hamate bones because he's being a switch hitter with the Giants. I feel like it's usually like a 2 to 3 month deal, and then it takes a little time after that. So we're talking like 6 months before the season starts. I think he'll be more than fine. The power might even be back to normal. We'll see. But yeah, he should be in spring training. I'd be shocked if he's not in spring training. To your point of where will his power be, whole nother story with that one. Brandon Woodruff goes to the IL with a lat strain that he suffered during his bullpen session. They're hoping he's ready to go for the postseason. They have the first round bye in Milwaukee. Woodruff was throwing great, Ben. And I was getting quite interested in, you know, what could he, to your 2026 point, like, where could Brandon Woodruff go in this scenario? Because he's starting to throw well. He went in round seven at pick six in round seven to Mike Mager in the meatball draft. Honestly, the way he's pitching even since that draft, he's probably moved up a couple rounds. Now this injury, if he doesn't do much in the postseason, could change all that.
For sure. I pulled up his stats. He was someone that I did not trust coming back from his shoulder injury because of how long it took him and the severity of it. But he's right in line with his career numbers, Woodruff. It's pretty incredible. He has arguably – he actually has his best K-minus walk of his career. Granted, it's a small sample, but just to come back from that injury and be this dominant is pretty impressive. Yeah, this hurts the Brewers. Hopefully he's back in time for them to contribute to their postseason run, but a lat strain, a moderate. So I feel like moderate's probably worse than mild, right?
Yes, it should be.
Yeah, so that feels more like a grade two potentially, and I think that would probably knock him out of the playoffs completely. So that's unfortunate. I'm not a doctor, but that's just my thought on the terminology they use to describe it. So hopefully it's not true and he can come back, but I don't know. This also clouds his outlook for next year too, because he had the shoulder, now here's lat. Maybe they're related. They probably are. Pretty similar location. So this is tricky, but if you were counting on Woodruff in your daily leagues or leagues that are still going, it hurts there too as well.
Definitely. Our good buddy Bruce Zimmerman, former Orioles, getting the start on Tuesday in place of Brandon Woodruff. Not saying to pick him up, but that's where the Brewers are right now. On Tuesday, feels like kind of out of nowhere, Mackenzie Gore went onto the IL with an ankle sprain, ending his season. This was interesting, Ben, because he already came back earlier than I think we all expected. Like most of us thought he was out for the season when he went on the IL the first time. Came back and pitched two pretty decent games. Like, not bad. Kind of got me going, okay, maybe I was right all along and we should be interested in him still going into the next season. Now he's got the ankle sprain, not the arm, not the shoulder, so I'm not concerned there. But on the season for 2025 for Mackenzie Gore, we've got the highs, really highs, and then some very big lows. What are your thoughts entering 2026? Because this feels like a guy that you would just stay away from.
Right. I had him ranked, I think, in a competitive spot, Gore, going into the season. But there were other pitchers around, I think it was like around pick 200. He probably even went higher in main events once things started getting going. So I was in on him, but I couldn't really get past what's his career whip? His career whip, even after this year, when it was his career best, is 1.40. Because he had three straight years to start his career of at least 1.4 whip against Gore. He was at 1.35. We thought he had kind of gotten rid of that issue because he was pitching so well in the first half. And then things fell apart in the second half. So I won't be drafting him probably because it's 4 years in a row of almost a career 1.4 whip. So I know the K's are nice, but I'll work on getting Hayes earlier in the draft or from somebody else.
Yeah, I'll probably get sucked in again and wonder why I'm not finishing in the top of the thing again. But we'll see. We'll see where his ADP goes. Maybe other people will share the concerns that you're sharing, and it drops him quite a bit. But I guess we'll wait for next season for that, because I'm trying to see his. I don't even think he got drafted in the meatball, which is nuts to think about. But yeah, I'm not seeing his name anywhere as I give a quick scroll through here. All right, a couple more things. Andrew Benintendi goes to the IL, ending his season. Pretty good season for Benny, a guy that a lot of us were like, okay, he could be a late, you know, 15-team play, but he was showing like 12-team stream ability as the season went along. Second straight year where he's seen a lot of power from Benny Biceps, but and the batting average has taken a hit because of that. But honestly, for fantasy, I'd almost kind of prefer the way he's going the last two seasons. And it's a White Sox team that's young, and we really liked them for fantasy as the season went on. Could be an interesting spot here for Benny Biceps. Let me make sure he's actually going to be on the White Sox before I go too excited about this. But, yeah, he's signed till 2028. So this is a guy that should be firmly in play once again this year.
I think so. I think he'll make a great DC pick, assuming that he's not really going as a top five outfielder in terms of the ADP. Because I'd be fine with him as my outfielder six going into those DC drafts, but I would not want to have him rely on him being my starter, Andrew Benintendi, just because the average is probably going to hurt you. And 20 homers is good, but there's no, if your average is that low, I kind of want some speed with it. And he's not stealing anymore. The sprint speed is kind of representing the decline in steals, because Benintendi was 30th percentile this year in sprint speed, which if you, I mean, Soto is below that. So anyone could steal with Soto's sprint speed, but it's the intent. And I don't think Benintendi is trying to steal anymore. So, yeah, it's a good park for power, I think, for him in Chicago. And I'd be curious to see if they end up trading him at some point. Maybe he's a good veteran presence for all the young players they're going to have. So I could see there being value in keeping him as well. I don't know how many teams would really want to trade for Benintendi. I guess someone could always be in need of an outfielder at some point. But if he's got that many more years left on his contract, I doubt that someone's going to want to trade for him, because he could collapse in the last year or two. So he's probably stuck with the White Sox for now, and I'll be hopefully getting him as outfielder six or seven in DCs.
That would be awesome if he falls that far, for sure. All right, last bit of news that just for people in there, even weekly, if they have bi-weekly, Trey Turner is expected back this weekend to get some at-bats before the postseason, so keep that in mind if you have some Trey Turner on your roster. The Rays also announced right before the show that Jonathan Aranda is going to head back and visit the team on Wednesday. If everything goes well, he could rejoin the team for the last three or four games of the season, if that's something you're into. And Anthony Santander got activated from the IL on Tuesday. So you have some moving parts that have come back into your world, probably more DC-relevant plays, but even in your daily leagues, players that could have an impact to finish out the season. All right, Ben, let's take a look at the Fab recap for the week. We'll go Fab recap. We'll do first round 2026 and see where we can go from there. And do that. So let's do a little Fab recap. Nothing too crazy here, but for those that keep track at home, we usually go over the OC 12-team leagues, peek at the 15s also, and obviously it doesn't really matter a ton what we think of the moves at this point in time. It's more just discussing the players, maybe giving thoughts for the future. The most added player, Ben, in 12-team OCs was Isak Paredes in 105 leagues, as high as $60, as low as a dollar. He was added in 40 main events, as high as 17, as low as a dollar. Isak returned last week to the surprise of a few people, obviously, as he was originally out for the season with his injury. He came back, got the Crawford Block experience, did not hit a home run by any means, but collected two hits in the three games. Did hit a home run actually on Sunday. My bad. So he's back with the team. They're in Sacramento to start the week here. But just in general, when we're talking Paredes, a guy we know is a Deadpool hitter that flourishes with those Crawford boxes, was having a pretty darn good season, all things considered, before that gruesome injury that kept him out for 2 months of baseball. Where are you at on Isak right now?
I was kind of out on him when he was still with the Cubs because of how not close to home plate their left field line is. And then when he got traded to the Astros, I'm like, okay, I'm back in. It's kind of made for him. So looking at Paredes' stats, I think if he stayed healthy, he probably could have gotten around what he did in 2023 when he was a pretty high draft pick in 2024. The average was better. It was 257. He had 20 homers and fewer than 400 at bats, over 50 runs in RBIs. So I think he would have gotten 30 homers probably at least 80 runs and RBIs, and I think he would have been pretty valuable. So I think mid-100s next year will be good for him. Definitely play him if you have him in DCs. I do have Paredes in a DC. I did play him, so I was happy. I needed that boost. Hopefully, I don't know if it's one of my good DCs, but regardless, he's in the lineup. And I think as long as he's in a ballpark like even Fenway, Houston, or anywhere else, where even Yankee Stadium to a degree is kind of short down the line. So he's someone I would probably disregard the poor Statcast, and assuming that it is still kind of poor because of what he does with pulling the ball in the air. Paredes still has pretty bad exit velocity numbers, barrel rates. Even his XBA isn't that good, but he gets it done and it works. So no one's been able to stop him yet. And I think as long as he's healthy going into 2026, I'll be in on him again.
Yeah, in that ballpark, it changes everything for Isak Paredes. I'm definitely with you on that one. We'll skip Austin Martin. He's picked up in 83 OCs. We've talked about him each of the last 2 weeks. Should have been widely rostered already. Good batting average, tons of speed. Hitting second for the Twins. Good matchups this week as well. Treya Savage of the Toronto Blue Jays. He made two starts this past week to start his season off. He pitched a total of 9 innings. First start, 5 innings, 1 run, 9 Ks at Tampa. Goes into Kansas City, 4 innings, 4 runs, 3 walks, 2 Ks. Completely different start for Mr. Savage, Ben. And when we're looking at the schedule this week, he is projected to face Tampa Bay on Friday. Did you show any interest in Savage? Because this Toronto team, like, it seems like it's a lot of these young kids we've seen with Miz and others. That, like, the ceiling looks really, really high, but there's a lot of uncertainty to get to that ceiling from time. It's like, it's almost like chutes and ladders. Like, you can go up the hill, and then the chute comes down. I'm like, okay, let's build it back up again. That's youth. That's just the way it works most of the time. So where were you at on Treya Savage? Because before I let you go there, there were a lot of starting pitching streamers this week. A lot more with, I guess, a history, one might say.
Your chutes and ladders reference sounds like my main event team right now, the way it's going up and down in the overall.
It's called having a toddler. I got all those references, whatever you need.
Yeah. I used to play that game back in the day. It was a fun game.
It is fun. It's really fun unless you play with a five-year-old who doesn't understand why dad just went to the top and she went to the bottom. Doesn't understand how that's fair.
Bryce says you're cheating.
Pretty much, yeah.
Yeah, fun time. So, yeah, I looked at, yeah, so Savage, he has the Rays you mentioned, and he's in Toronto, which is also a good sign. The Rays have been slightly below average versus righties last in September is when I pulled my data for the – I have the streaming sheet up that we've been going over in previous weeks. 96 WRC plus versus righties for the Rays. Yeah, it wasn't an ideal second start for Savage, but I think he showed enough in the first outing where I was okay with taking a chance on him. I did get him in one of my main events. It wasn't a good one. I was surprised. I ended up just bidding my last $3 on him, and I got him. And I played him this week. It's not going to matter for anything. But, yeah, I saw how high his release angle is, and I think that's why Savage had the success he did in the first start. And plus, it was versus the Rays in the first start. Of course, you're going to argue that, okay, second time, they're going to see him now, maybe have a better view on what he does. They'll be kind of used to the release point probably, if they can remember that far back. But he had 9 Ks, 2 walks, and 5 innings versus them. So I think if you're in a daily league still where you could add Savage, I think it's a decent stream, especially, like I said, since it'll be in Toronto and not in Tampa Bay.
Yep, I agree. Like, it's a very nice ceiling stream. It's like we've said a million times. You and I have said it. Ryan and I have said it. Others have said it. This last week, 2 weeks, whatever, it's all about what your team needs. If you want a guy with a ton of strikeout upside, Savage could be that dude. If you go on a guy that could blow up your ratios, we've seen he could be that good guy too. So it just depends on what you're looking for this week. And if you need the strikeouts, he does have that strikeout ceiling where you could go for the gusto. All right, Michael McGreevy was picked up in 63 leagues. He had a two-step. First start didn't go well. I told him in the Fab article I wrote, I said sit him this week. But, 63 people picked him up, so that's good. They don't read the article. I want to ask you about Ha-Sung Kim, though. Of the Atlanta Braves, picked up in 55 leagues, as high as $45, as low as a dollar. Long gone in mains. I was surprised he was this available when I wrote him up. He was less than 60% rostered going into the week in OCs, which surprised me a ton. The reason I wanted to bring him up, Ben, is like when the Braves got him, I thought, like, what are the Rays doing? Doesn't make sense. The guy's been hurt, but he's very good. Since joining the Braves, he essentially hits fifth or sixth every day. He's entering Tuesday night riding a 10-game hitting streak, Ben, where he's hitting 378 with 2 homers, 12 runs, and 8 RBIs. Like, he's a very good hitter. Very, very good hitter. So I guess more importantly, going forward, where do we kind of see him shake out, I guess, in the shortstop landscape, a position we think is very deep, which it is. I think we all came to this conclusion last year. It's a very top-heavy position. Still has depth. Very top-heavy position, though. And then it's kind of a gap where, okay, now we've got a bunch of middle infielders. Where do you think Kim kind of fits in there? You don't have to give me an exact number because you haven't done your 2026 research. I know that. But just kind of a brief thought, I guess.
Well, his profile is typically like a 10 to 15 homers, 30 steals, which is kind of what Bryson Stott, Andrés Giménez, those guys profile as well. And they were going in the mid to late, like, I don't know, like 150 to 170 range, in, I think, in ADP last year. So I pulled up Kim's Statcast, and the main thing with him I want to see is the steals, because since he's come back, he hasn't really stolen that much. And on the season, he has 5 homers and 6 steals. You expect to see at least double the steals compared to the homers. So then I pulled up his Statcast, and his sprint speed is down to 52nd percentile. It's been around upper 70s or 80s in his first 4 seasons. And he's lost a foot per second on his sprint speed, Kim. And I think he had one of his injuries was a leg injury. I forget.
Yes.
Knee or whatever it was. So that's a little concerning, but maybe he's just trying to take it easy with the season almost over. So there's a chance he's not as fast going into 2026 anymore, and therefore maybe he's a 20 steal guy, which could be valuable, but it's got to be at the right price. He is not really a good average hitter either. He has hit around 260 is the highest. He's hit 233 last year in San Diego. So he's okay. And the power, he really only had 17 homers that 1 year. So it's tricky. I think he probably goes past pick 200 again, and which is fine, because you can still be valuable with steals in that range. And he could be on a good lineup. We keep saying that about the Braves every year, that they should bounce back, and they haven't yet, but he's good defensively. So they'll keep him in the lineup every day. So that'll help him hitting lower in the lineup as well. So I think Kim is he's interesting for next year. He's not going to be a big impact player, but he could be probably a net positive in terms of draft value if he goes to the right spot.
Yeah, I feel like he'll be in that kind of maybe second or third wave of shortstops where he could jump a wave if things click. Like if Austin Riley comes back and hits, if we get the real Ronald Acuna, these are lots of ifs, obviously, if Albies. But like you compared him to Stott and Giménez's profile, I agree. The stat line's very similar. But he'll also play every day where Stott will platoon. And he's hitting fifth or sixth when Riley comes back. They're probably like maybe he's more sixth or seventh. Still, we've seen when the Braves are clicking like 2 or 3 years ago for the young folks out there, even the seventh, eighth hitters were producing like massive numbers, like a full season of profile. Like this lineup has so much potential. It's amazing how bad they've been for 2 straight years. But I think Kim's one of those that could jump to another level potentially and could be very, very interesting going forward. Moises Ballesteros picked up in 54 leagues as high as $30, as low as $1. He's picked up in 22 mains as high as 10, as low as $1. He is sitting tonight versus a lefty. He sat versus the last 3 lefties. The Cubs face 4 righties in their last 5 games, so he should get plenty of playing time going forward. Moises Ballesteros is hitting .261 with 2 home runs with pretty good plate discipline, Ben. I picked him up in a couple places this week where I had Wilson Contreras. What were your thoughts on Mr. Ballesteros?
Yeah, I think he was already added in the 15-teamers once he got called back up originally. It's like he's platooning versus in a platoon as a left-handed hitter, which is unfortunate. But he is young, and he's not even 22 yet. But, yeah, I think that's a great stream for the last week. The Cubs, what do they have? They have
– you got 4 more righties coming up.
Yes, it's 2-2 if you go off of NFBC lineup settings. But that's fine. He's a catcher, so you're not going to expect full PT anyway. For most of them, at least, and he's hitting .261 by Ballesteros on the season, which is you'll take that all day. Couple homers, so I think this is good. I wonder, you think he'll be in the lineup full time next year?
That's what I'm trying to figure out, because he's playing DH, so it's not like he's catching. And Miguel Amaya is still very good, and he might come back for a couple games to finish the week, get ready for the postseason. So I'm really confused. Like, he could be another Ivan Herrera that just DHs. Now Ivan's going to have surgery, supposed to catch next year. We'll see how that plays out. But the Ballesteros one is very tricky for me, because if he plays every day, the bat's great, catcher, this and that, and assuming he gets catcher eligibility still, who knows what the NFBC will do in that regard. but if he's playing, obviously he's great. I have a massive concern, because Miguel Amaya is still very good. And I think he's going to get his reps as well.
Is Saya a free agent?
I can check for you real quick.
Well, also, too, they may not get Kyle Tucker back.
Kyle Tucker's a free agent. That could change a lot of things. Saya is a free agent in 2027.
Okay, so if they don't sign Tucker, then, I mean, Saya could play the outfield if they wanted to do that. I know they kind of avoid that if possible. But that would help keep Ballesteros in the lineup for next year if he doesn't catch.
Yeah, I just want to bring this up real quick. I didn't mention it in news. Adley Rutschman returned from the IL. He's catching on Tuesday. Basayo is playing DH on Tuesday. Curious to see how that continues to go the rest of the week, because maybe be a little foreshadowing for things down the line. Bryce Elder picked up in 45 OCs, as high as 109, as low as a dollar, widely rostered in main events, as he should be. I've been pounding this Bryce Elder drum. I believe you've been kind of pounding it with me, maybe more so. Ryan's told me I'm an idiot, but I'm used to that because that's what friends do. But I just wanted to point out for those keeping track at home, Bryce Elder, there was a stat that came out. Most innings pitched by a Brave starter this season. That's a testament to their injuries. But Bryce Elder, over his last six starts, has five quality starts. He's allowed two earned runs or less in five of those six starts, been with a 2.63 ERA over those six starts, with a 3.78 Sierra and a 17.2% K to walk. He's been quite serviceable.
I've heard way too much Bryce Elder talk the last week or so between, like you said, you and Ryan, we've discussed him. I think CBS was talking about him because of his start versus the Tigers on the 19th. He's been very popular, and this is what happens at the end of the season when you need pitchers. So it's kind of sad because he has 149 innings, to your point, as the Braves innings leader, of a 5.33 ERA and a 1.41 whip. not good. Where's the Braves? They are here.
He's doing his Temu Schwellenbach impersonation. Like, hey, am I good enough for next season's draft, guys?
Oh God, you're ruining the Schwellenbach name by comparing him to Bryce Elder.
Well, he's got to stay healthy to keep me from doing that.
That's true. I'll take 100 innings of a 3 ERA and a 1 WHIP though. That's always very helpful. Yeah, the Nationals, who Elder is facing, I think it's either today or tomorrow. There have been about 94 WRC plus versus righties, and you mentioned all the good stats for Elder lately. He just had that one blow up versus the Astros, which is kind of defensible. So I think he's a solid stream, but it could really, if you're chasing like first place or something, or you're in a tight, if you're in a tight head-to-head matchup, I guess it depends on the direction of the tightness. If you're like leading in ERA and WHIP, maybe try not to use Elder, but if you're chasing and you need a dominant outing, maybe he could provide that versus the Nationals, but it's kind of a coin toss, I think, at what's going to happen with this start for Elder.
Yep, agreed. Always a coin toss. It feels like when he's out there, just right now, the coins are in the right direction. All right, Keegan Aiken was a popular ad for potential saves. Like, he picked up three saves last week for the Orioles, so deal with that. You know, you don't get those stats, but you can shoot for more. Steven Kolek, wanted to get your thoughts here. 44 ads in the OC, as high as $50, as low as a dollar. He's picked up in 26 main events, as high as 35, as low as a dollar. Steven Kolek has made four starts since rejoining the rotation for the Royals on August 30th. He has four quality starts. He's got at least six innings of two earned runs or less, one walk or less in each start. Strikeouts are an issue. He did 8 Ks his last start versus Seattle, though. Where are you at on Steven Kolek? It is a boring profile, but it's like Michael Walkie in it right now.
He is. That's a very good comp because he has 39 Ks and 46 and two-thirds innings in the year. But he showed some strikeout stuff versus the Mariners. 8-7 in the third. So he plays for Kansas City. Who does he face this week? He gets the Angels. That's why he's getting added as well. Came off a very good start. Now he gets the Angels, who have been pretty bad. I would much rather sign off on the Kolek start than I would the Elder start. Yeah, Kolek, the Angels have a 74.5 WRC plus versus righties in September. So much more appealing matchup in my eyes.
Yeah, the Kolek and the Rendon streams this week versus the Angels are going to be some full tilts, because I know a lot of smart people were on those. Let's put it that way. For very good reasons, when all things are said and done. Would you rather have Kolek or Yusevich?
Oh, I think Yusevich had, like, the WRC plus wasn't as good
for the Rays.
Yeah. That's a good question, Bubba.
I've been doing this for a few years.
Yes, you have. You know what you're doing. I'll I'll say Kolek, maybe.
I would too. It's just a safety net. I guess if you need strikeouts, you can go your Savage. But if you want the overall profile, I'm with you. Like that matchup, I say strikeouts, but against the Angels, they're striking like 28% of the time versus righties over the last month. Like, if Kolek just shows up and does a three quarters of what he did versus the Mariners, he probably walks away with another 8 strikeout game. And like, yeah, I think Kolek is a sneaky good play. And so, well, apologize to everybody in advance.
So you mentioned how we're targeting the Angels. Do you remember last year it was the same exact thing? Because remember Davis Martin was facing the Angels last year and he was terrible in the last week? It's deja vu.
Well, the Angels. We were targeting the White Sox. Wasn't that the Reed Detmer starts against the White Sox?
Yeah, they played each other. It was Angels White Sox. So everyone was adding all the Angels and all the White Sox, and it went horribly wrong for everybody.
Yes. Everyone's like, oh, look at these numbers. This is great. This is a smart move. This is why baseball's awesome. And then we realized why baseball's baseball. And it just completely blew up in our faces.
Yep. I had Martin on a couple teams. Yeah, it wasn't good.
All right. A couple more here. Harrison Bader. He's picked up in 43 OC. Should have been picked up a long time ago. Don't have a lot to add there. Dude's just been a monster leading off for the Phils. Verlander picked up in 38 OCs as high as 150, as low as a buck, blown up in the first of a two-step. And I loved it. I joked about it last week saying, well, I tried to add him last week. Everyone in my leagues already has him. So thank you, everybody.
Yeah, I wish this was a vodka or something because I did play him in the listener league where it's very close standings-wise.
It was a great play. And he still might he gets the Rockies this weekend. It could all come back to being okay.
Yeah, but then I was looking at his game log, and he got so lucky versus the Diamondbacks and the Dodgers. He had seven Ks and six walks in 14 innings, and he had a one run allowed in for those 14 innings. So he got so lucky. Of course, we knew that was going to be an avoid. That wasn't a two-star week. This is a two-star week. So, yeah, what are you going to do? But to your point, hopefully the Rockies clean up his mess that he's created for us so far.
I agree. A couple more that we can go over here. We talked about Mackenzie Gore earlier. He was picked up in 34 leagues, as high as 100, as low as a dollar, and he's gone. Ryan Weathers is picked up in 34 leagues, as high as 49, as low as a dollar. Potential two-step. Not sure if he gets that second two-step. I want to get your thoughts here because this is a 15-team move with some 12-team appeal. Nate Eaton of the Boston Red Sox picked up in 30 OCs, as high as 29, as low as a dollar. Nate Eaton. When I was doing my Fab article, I was like, okay, he's playing a lot. This is very interesting. If you look at the Red Sox roster resource page, Nate Eaton it's changed. He sat the last two games when Willy Abreu came back, so that changed everything. But so that might make people quite angry here. He was playing almost every day, Ben. This is why this gets interesting. And the dude is mashing. He's hitting like 7 of his last 10 games, home run. He's got 3 steals, like, there was a lot to like there, but it looks like he might be losing playing time.
He was at the top of my Fab list, Nate Eaton was, and then I double-checked playing time on Sunday before Fab ran, and I saw he was sitting, and I went to the lineup page to see why, and I saw Willier was back, and I said, yep, that's it. So I removed him from all my lists, and I even heard Scott Jensen on the RotoWire pod say how he was a good ad, and I'm like, I don't know, Scott. It's because Willier's back, unfortunately, and if you don't see that lineup on Sunday, then you don't know what the context is for Eaton, which is unfortunate because he said he was in for average. He was stealing, I think he had like 3 or 4 steals last week, exactly what I needed in the main event. But Willier had to come back and screw it all up. Actually, it's more Yoshida's fault because it makes sense to have Willier in the lineup. You don't want Yoshida in the lineup though. So it's unfortunate, but if you fabbed Nate Eaton, he's probably not going to play for you this weekend unless there's lefties on the weekend, which I don't think is the case really. So yeah, the only lefty they face is Scooble, so enjoy that matchup.
Well, speaking of Scooble, he just hit David Fry in the face with a fastball, and Fry's bleeding out of his face, and Scooble is like ready to cry on the mound right now. That looks bad. Looks real bad. Like Scooble this isn't good. So hopefully that ends better. My goodness, that was nasty, right? As you mentioned his name, the highlight came on, and blood just coming out of Fry's face. That is not good. Okay, yeah, well, let's keep an eye on that one. As Scooble just like dropped everything right away. It was like, oh no, shoot, not good. That's scary, scary stuff there. But we'll have to keep an eye on that. That looked nasty. All right, I guess we move on from there. And I want to mention Xander Bogaerts. He's supposed to be back this week, Ben. He was picked up in 33 main events, as high as 8, as low as a dollar. Are you interested in a guy like Bogaerts if available? I'm like, these guys that are coming back to get reps for the playoffs, I was kind of like, yeah, I don't know if I like, they just want reps. Do I really want those in my lineup?
I would, just because you're getting a a relatively high draft pick for potentially a dollar. And but like we were saying, I think it was before we recorded, the Padres are sitting everybody. But in, maybe in Xander's case, they want, he's one of the guys who plays all six games this week just because he hasn't played in so long. But I don't think he was available in any of my leagues. Actually, the tab's not even there anymore for me to tell now that the fat, now the fab's over. So I would have been in if I needed a middle infielder, but he was not on any of my list if he was available.
I got to throw this one out here in the main events. Christian Moore picked up in 22 leagues, as high as 17, as low as a dollar. I was all in on Christian Moore and DCs and everything to start the season. It's been a roller coaster of emotions for Christian Moore. But I will say he was recalled on September 13th when one of the millions of injuries that the Angels keep going through took place. And he's played pretty much every day. It's been eight games, safely in six of eight games for two. But see, it's a 2.14 average, Ben. Three homers and two steals, but a 42% strikeout rate. So, like, when I saw all that, when I was writing him up, like, I still can't roster that. He's left Coors. Like, he's going home. I love the skills of Moore. He's super cheap. I'll still be interested next year in DCs. But for Fab this week, I wasn't as excited.
Yeah, since he wasn't going to get Coors again, it's a little annoying. And looking at the matchups, though, for the Angels, they have Reagans tonight. He probably won't go that deep. Then they get Kolek, we talked about, and Lorenzen. Kolek's been pitching well, but I kind of alluded to it. He doesn't have the highest K rate on the year, and Lorenzen, we all know what he is. And then Moore would get Jason Alexander, AJ Blubaugh, and Christian Javier again when they play the Astros. So I think four of the six matchups are pretty good for him. But yeah, if he's striking out so often, it's going to be tough to have an impact if you're. Yeah, because last week Moore had 10 Ks and 21 at bats despite having two homers and two steals. So he was pretty bad at field in that week. But if kind of like the when I was talking about with Elder before, if you're shooting for the moon and you want some homer and steal upside and you don't really care about the average, then go for it. And I think that's a fine ad. It just could be a 2 for 20 week worth with nothing at the same time. So it's a pretty wide range of outcomes this week for Moore.
Agreed. Just a couple more I want to bring up just for name value. Like for me, if instead of paying up for Treya Savage, I was thinking if I just want to have a strikeout upside and I don't know how many innings he's throwing, give me Kaiwei Tang. I've talked about him a lot, especially with Bloomfield. Kaiwei Tang picked up in 20 main events, as high as $6, as low as a dollar. It's crazy. Just look at his game logs. He's gone five innings twice, picked up wins in both of those. He's usually a 3 to 4 inning guy. It's like two earned runs or less in 4 out of 7 or something like that, give or take, but a ton of strikeouts. It's like his two outings where he walked a ton of guys were his two worst outings. If he sticks to two walks or less, he racks up Ks, doesn't crush you by any means. So, like, if you needed wins, probably not the best play. But if you wanted strikeouts with some upside, I loved it because, Ben, Kaiwei Tang is projected to face the Road Rockies. So, on paper, if I'm looking at Tang versus the Rockies or you Savage versus the Rays, I was going Tang for a buck.
If you don't need a win, it makes complete sense. I like that move. Because I think we talked about Tang when we mentioned the streamers last week, and he already faced the Rockies in Coors. He had 8 Ks, no walks, and 5 1/3. So he has dominated them already. And then he had the Cardinals 4 innings, the Diamondbacks, and the Dodgers 4 and 3 respectively. And he had more than a K per inning in all those outings. So it's a good chance he gets you at least 6 strikeouts against the Rockies, I'd say. And I think that's why he was added. And there's an off chance he goes 5 innings and gets the win. So it's a pretty good gamble at this point in the season.
All right. Anybody else you want to discuss? And Tyler Molly was picked up in 17 mains. People liked how he returned from the IL. Bryce Eldridge in 17 mains. I actually thought he'd be picked up more because the Giants faced 5 righties in 6 games. Could have led to some serious upside there. Nolan Schoenwald's back from the IL. Dominic Canzone's crushing. He gets 5 righties in 6 games. Anybody else that you wanted to discuss before we talk? We'll discuss our moves just to let people know our thought process before we talk 2026 first round.
Yeah, I did have a bid list with Eldridge, and you stopped right before him, but Connor Norby was back as well. The Marlins were facing a handful of lefties. They had Sanchez, Lizardo, Manaea, Peterson, with Walker and Sproat in the middle of that. So I like that for even though Lizardo and Sanchez are pretty good and Manaea and Peterson can be good as well. I thought it was good that Norby was getting so many lefties. And then you didn't, I'm sorry, I didn't mention your guy, Carter Jensen, but I had a bid in for him. But then I saw that there was a handful of lefties coming up for.
That's why I backed off. His projected three lefties and three righties. And then he's util only to top it off. I'm like, oh no, this is not going to end well.
Yeah. If you wanted to wait till the weekend when he gets two righties in Sacramento, I guess it makes sense, but it's hard to waste a roster spot when you know you can't use them in the first half of the week, unless you knew you had a set lineup. But the util only also hurts as well. So, yeah, there's like go ahead.
I said I'd be cool for the second half of the week, but like when we go over my moves, I basically had like $2 in every league, so I was making $2 $1 moves. It was one of those tough. I still could have, and we'll talk about that. So sorry, but that's the problem. It's one of those. If I had like $10 to spend, that I could redo my whole roster. Yeah, that would make a boatload of sense and probably a smart move, but it was difficult in my scenario.
Yep.
All right. Then tell us.
I'll say Scooble blew the lead now after hitting Fry, so he's probably all shaken.
First batter after Fry throws a wild pitch, like he was all over the place. His head was not there. Don't blame him. They hit a guy in the face with a fastball. All right. What were your ad drops for the week?
All right. This will be quick. New Jersey, Maine, I added Trey Savage. I mentioned dropped Colin Ray 3-1. Maine 2, I added Dominic Canzone, dropped Martin Perez 1-1. In the Listener League, I added TJ Friedel, dropped Jose Ferrer 1-0. And then my last move in the good main this year was a $1 win of Darrell Hernandez, dropped Chris Bassett 1-0. I figured I needed a backup corner because I wasn't sure what was going on with Caminero, and I lost Sal Stewart, and Hernandez gets 6 games at home. So I said, if I have to play him, it's a pretty good scenario.
That is totally fair. For me, like I said, I got one league with $3, otherwise there's two or less. So all $1 moves, pretty much primarily dropped pitchers that I would not be pitching this week, as Ben brought to our attention a couple weeks ago. You don't need those. You need the bats. So I picked up Cody Clemens, dropped Pablo Lopez 1-1. We'll see how that goes. I liked my other matchups this week, so it might have been a bad move. We'll see. But I liked Clemens' flexibility more than anything. It's like if we start seeing these guys get hurt, he gives me options and swinging it very well. And similar to that, I picked up Caleb Durbin, dropped Luis Morales. Love Morales this year, but that home start against, I think it's Houston this week, terrifies me. So he was not going to likely be in my rotation either. That's in my first OC, my Beat Bubba OC. You're going to see a lot of trends here. I picked up Xavier Edwards, though, dropped Jordan Leisure. And I picked up Harrison Bader, dropped Luis Morales. So I like both of those moves. And a 12-team standalone, picked up by, this is only my only $3 league. Moises Ballesteros dropped Wilson Contreras. Harrison Bader dropped Jordan Leisure. Romy Gonzalez picked up Luis Morales. Romy's been playing a ton and has some flexibility there as well. The Vegas 12-teamer, which has been a wild one up top, dropped Wilson Contreras, picked up Moises Ballesteros, $1 with a $1 runner-up. Picked up Alec Burleson, who's been swinging it really well, dropped Nabil Crismat 1-1 as well, which means I'm in fourth, so all those backups are in the top three, which makes me laugh because they're fighting hard for that spot.
It's a good feeling.
Yes, it is. If I can't win, I'm going to make it difficult for the rest of you. Bubba in the Bloom Listener League, I had $3 here apparently. Picked up Jake Bowers, dropped Luis Severino 1-0. Bowers is raking, and they had 5 righties in 6 games, so he should play a lot. Picked up Brooks Lee, dropped Nick Martinez 1-0. And picked up Thomas Ajayi. He's got second, short, and third base eligibility. Dropped Cade Cavalli 1-1. And then in my OLAC, where it's slowly slipping away, I had one whole dollar to spend, and I needed to what would you have done here? So I dropped Wilson Contreras, picked up Samuel Vasaya 1-1. Would you have rather taken a zero at catcher and picked up a different position, or would you have replaced your catcher? I was torn on this one.
What are your counting stats like in hitting?
I told you this is the league where my hitting took a poop last week, and that's where all my points can be made. So, pardon me saying I should have taken a zero in catcher, but to me, I thought if a zero could be almost worse. I was just all over the place.
Well, Ballesteros, you said it was Ballesteros, right?
Yeah, so he's sitting versus lefties to top it off.
Yes, he has Jonah Tong, Nolan McLean, Michaelis, and McGreevy. I would have done that, I think. Assuming that, how many other bench hitters do you have?
I can tell you right now, if you give me 1 second. I think I'm pretty loaded at the show up. No, maybe Knox only had one freaking dollar to spend in that league. So I have I only have 3 bench hitters. Yeah, it's tough.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's okay. Well, you'll know at the end of the week. But
yeah, I was torn.
It was good matchups to go after, so I think it's okay.
Okay, well, appreciate that.
I would say the problem was more so that you were down with a dollar with that many pitchers left.
That's what I needed. Like
that was the bigger issue, but it's not really
like in most. Yeah, most of my other leagues, I managed to like get rid of a couple pitchers, or yeah, didn't have that luxury here, unfortunately.
Yeah.
A couple questions from the chat before we do our 2026 first round. Anthony Falia in the chat says, how is Yuri Perez ranked higher than Christopher Sanchez and Freddie Peralta in Dynasty? I wouldn't have him ranked higher.
Let me look. Christopher Sanchez is 28. I think it's just because of age. I think yeah, Perez is like 23, 24, and he showed pretty good flashes when he came back originally.
That would make sense, yes.
I'm not a Dynasty guy, but that's my answer looking at the three guys. So it's Dynasty. Like the win potential is better for the other two, and they're probably better now, so that's probably why.
Uncle Ted, how does the overall scoring work? I see guys with less points in my leagues with higher overalls. You would know way better than me.
It's the exact same scoring as Roto, but the problem is that it's not a problem, but the difference is that you have, take the main event for example, 855 teams, so there's 855 total points per stat is the highest you can have, and I'm not sure the exact scenario that would create the situation Ted's talking about, but it is common because the best example is that Bob Kramatola won the overall in 2022 when Steve Weimer was in the same league, and he actually finished ahead of Bob. So it's all about how far you are away from the other teams in all 10 stats. So if Bob finished better in the overall, it means he had a better overall team, most likely. But the way the league was set up, Weimer was more optimized to get enough league points. So maybe Weimer won runs by like two, or was ahead of the next team and runs by two. Say Bob finished 15 with 15 runs points in his league. Weimer had 14. If Bob had, I don't know, like a 1,200 runs, and then Weimer had 1,000 runs, all those teams between 1,000 and 1,200 runs would help Bob get more points in the overall. So it's all about where you are distribution wise with the other teams, and when there's the overall with so many more teams, like the OC for example too. There's a lot more moving, and there's a lot more teams that you could be ahead of or behind in that case as well. So it's weird. I have a team like that too in a DC where I'm ahead of someone in the league. I think it's actually Curlin, and he's has a much better overall team than I do. But it's just how my team's a little more optimized for the league, whereas he probably has the better team in that scenario.
Gotcha. Don't ever let Curlin hear you say that. All right.
He's aware of the situation. He messaged me about it earlier in the summer about how he was trying to chase me, and he's getting close, but I gotta fight him off.
Beautiful, beautiful. All right. As we kind of hinted at the beginning of the show, this is the final 2025 episode of the season. So let's have some fun, as we like to do, and people love when I say that word, for 2026. Let's get into a little, everyone's doing some other different kind of projection rankings, little exercises here and there. I figure this will just kind of slowly get the ball rolling, Ben. And we're going to do our top 15, essentially, off the draft board for 2026. Obviously, we had the meatball draft. I'll give the meatball one away once we give ours. So we'll go back and forth, Ben, and do one. And because I got mine written down, I'm pretty sure you probably have yours typed up or something. So I'll give you the floor. I'm glad you got the joke there. What do you have for your first? Because I have a feeling our first couple, at least two, are probably the same. Because I did get a little... I did mix things up a little bit after that. So what's your first pick?
I have Shohei first.
Yes, so do I. That's and you have Judge second?
I do.
Okay, well, then let's just start there. What's your reasoning behind the Shohei one, Judge second? Because like, if anybody wanted to take Judge first, I wouldn't argue them at all. Like I said, okay, I get it. But I have my reasons for Shohei. What's your reasons for Shohei at one?
He gets more steals than Judge.
Yes. Okay, that's my same reason.
I'm willing to bypass the util only. Sure, Judge fills one of your five outfielder spots, but I feel like Ohtani has a better bill of health despite being the pitcher. It's so close, though. The difference is seven steals, Judge has more RBIs. Everyone's talking about how many runs Ohtani has. He only has 11 more runs than Judge, so it's not a big difference. And Judge hasn't beaten an average. So I think they're neck and neck in the player radar when I was looking earlier. And you can't really go wrong. I just think I'd rather go with a little extra steals and maybe a little safer. And Otani's younger than Judge as well. So that's I'm not even being a homer. I'm just trying to be I can't think of the word right now, but I'm trying to be I can't think of the word. It's all right though. It's late in the season.
A non-biased
objective. I'm trying to be objective here with my reasoning. So perfect. That's it. Yeah.
All right. Now things that might get interesting. Who is your number three?
All right. So I'll say, so when I got my list of names, I was just writing down names in a spreadsheet and then I was going from there. I looked at last year's ADP. I looked at the Rasball player rater. And I looked at like the leaders in WOBA or WRC Plus on Fangraphs this year just to get an idea of all the best names and all that stuff. And this one guy didn't appear on any of the lists. And then I remember, I'm like, oh yeah, this guy used to be really good. I actually put Acuna third for
right
now.
That's fine. I was wondering where you'd have him. Okay, give your reasons.
So he had the other ACL torn. I had him up earlier. Let me pull his player page back up. I believe it was 2022 when Acuna got hurt last. No, he got hurt at the end of 2021, I believe, and he missed the start of 22. His power was down in 2022, only 15 homers. He did have 29 steals, though, so he started running a little bit more. And then I pulled up Acuna's Statcast to see how he's doing because he's not stealing a lot so far. I think he only has he has 8 steals. So Acuna has 19 homers and 8 steals and 390 plate appearances. So a little more than half of a season for him because he bats leadoff for the Braves. His barrel rate's still 15%. His XBA is 273. His sprint speed is a little bit lower, 62%. But if he could hit upper 30s homers with 20 steals and a 280 average and hit leadoff, he's going to have Otani-like runs. And he's just like Otani light, I think, with that profile. I think he'll steal more than Otani. He should. Acuna after a year removed from the ACL injury. So I think he kind of bounces right back. And hopefully I won't have to pay the third pick price for him. If I'm drafting later in the first round, maybe I can get him at eight or something. I'll do that all the time, I think. And I think projections will like Acuna as well too. So I think it's just time from the injury is really, I think, being a year and a half removed or whatever, however long it's going to be. I think that's really good for his 2028 outlook or 2026 outlook, excuse me.
Yeah, I was juggling on what to do with Acuna. I have him at five.
How far off?
I can see the arguments you made for three. I agree. It's one of those like, okay, he's starting to get healthy. He got the reps this year. Can he come into camp healthy? We know the dude like legit could go 40-40 if he clicks. I don't know if he's going to run like that anymore with all these knee injuries, but he's got the athletic abilities to be an absolute monster. And maybe they just stop lead. Like, I like the leadoff call. Maybe they say, screw it. We want to keep him as a power hitter. He's going to hit fourth and hit 40 home runs and steal, 15, 20 bags, but then drive in 120. Like, there's so many levels to where he can be an absolute beast with his skill set, still super young. So I have him fifth. And also a lot of that, like we joked about earlier, if the Braves could ever be offensively good again, like he's very, very good and they have the guys to do it. So time will tell. My number three is a guy that just does it year in and year out. Dude's 33, so it's a little concerning potentially. But give me J-Ram. Once again, hitting 282 this year, 30 homers, 40 steals. He had 39-41 last year. He's basically been good for 20-20 or better, all nearly 30-30 or better for a while. Average is always good. He's got like 200-plus runs in RBI. Like, just you can write him down. You can almost write him down, barring something crazy. Yes, he's getting older, which is weird to say because he doesn't feel like he feels like he's played forever. But he doesn't feel like he's 33 years old either. But I just love that consistency, especially at a third base position. If you can lock up that kind of stolen base production at a position that doesn't steal bases, that's a boost also. So, yeah, I got J-Ram at number three for me.
Want me to tell you where I have him?
Yeah, where did you have him?
I have him eighth.
Ooh, okay. Reasons.
I've been lower on – even last year, I was lower on J-Ram than ADP was. And it's kind of the same argument when I quickly looked today for half an hour before the show just to get something together. His barrel rate's below league average. J-Ram's, his X velocity's below league average. His hard hit's below league average. His chase rate's actually below league average now. I look dumb for fading him this year. I would have taken J-Ram if I had the chance. I don't even know where I had him ranked. I'd have to go back and look at my file from last year. But I keep – and he's – you mentioned he's getting older. He's 33 right now. He doesn't have the like the raw talent anymore that a lot of these other guys I have ahead of them do, mainly because of the age. And then the other thing too, so I know, well, you and Ryan, probably multiple times throughout the year, you look at the barrels per homers per barrel. JRAM has 30 homers and 36 barrels. He's getting every ounce of what he has left. And I'm just waiting for that to not be a top half of the first round value at some point. With the age, the lineup is awful around him. There's just a lot of warts for him to go third in my mind. He's great, and I've missed out on 2 years in a row of good production, but people always do the cliche, you want to be like a year early than a year late. That's kind of JRAM is my example of that that cliche. So that's where I'm at. I still am in the first round and mid first round, but I'd rather have other guys ahead of him. I think
it's fair. Like, that's why I think I kept saying he's 33, which is crazy. Like, he's gonna be 34. So
he's my age. Yeah, I'm saying I don't want me anymore.
Yeah, I wish I was your age. I get your concerns. That's why I was like, well, we'll see where this one goes. All right, so that's my number three. Yours is Acuna. Who's your number four?
So Uncle Ted mentioned him in the chat. I actually went with Juan Soto.
So did I.
Nice. I don't expect 30 steals again or 35, but he's hit 40 homers 2 years in a row. His stat cast is still like elite. He's almost 100 percentile in most of the sliders. He's 100th in xWOBA, 98th in xBA, 99th in xSlug. The top six are all as far right as possible. So it's just more of like a pure hitter that has the ability to steal if he wants to. He could be like Freddie Freeman potentially. I've been a little low on Soto. I do have him in a league this year in the DC. I think that's one of my DCs that's doing well. No surprise there. So, and he's a runs monster, not like Otani, but he's going to get 120 probably 2 years in a row. And I think the only thing that's really it's not even really a concern, but the average is always kind of up and down with him. He's back to 267 right now, Soto. So a little bit below where he's been the last 2 years and well below his XBA. I'm not sure what the reasoning behind that would be.
Well, I was going to say it's the second lowest BABIP of his career.
BABIP, there you go.
Like, it's 275. He had a 249 in 2022. Otherwise, he's usually around 300 to 330, somewhere in there. And so, like, that's one of those things we always talk about. You can't predict BABIP. And if that just tweaks back at all, now we're talking about a guy, Ben, that maybe hits 290. 45 homer, that's where I was at four with you. And I agree, like, he picked up his 36 steal tonight. He's gonna go 40-40 this year because he's got that mentality. He's gonna try to get 40 by the end of the week. So he's gonna go 40-40. And I don't see why he can't steal 30, because the way I look at it, he's still super young. And this might be a team philosophy. First year at the Mets, this team runs. Lindor gets 30 plus every year. They're gonna let Soto run. Nimmo used to run before he got hurt all the time. Like, it might be a team philosophy where you might get 25 to 30 steals from Soto for the next, you know, handful of years till he gets too old while he hits those 40 home runs. I almost put him third on my list, but the stolen bases always held me back, and that's why I understood where he was getting drafted this year. Now the question we can propose, Ben, is, do we move him up this much because of 1 year? That's always the question, but I think we do. I think you kind of agree as well.
Well, he's essentially a light Judge then at that point, because Judge will have more homers, but Judge is in the same boat with the steals. Well, the projected steals, at least, because Judge, you project for maybe 10. You probably project for high single digits, and then if he gets 10, you're lucky. So I think Soto, you can project for at least 13, 14 maybe, and that'll help close the gap between the two of them.
All righty. We both had Soto at four. Who's your number five? Because I had Acuna at five. So who's your five?
Oh, yeah. I think Witt's still deserving of being up near the top. So I was looking at his stat cast. So he's been unlucky with his homers. Witt still has a 12, almost 13% barrel, 13% barrel rate on the season. He has 23 home runs, but he has 61 barrels. So he should be at least 30 homers, probably, Bobby Witt. Granted, playing in Kauffman or whatever it's called now, KC, hurts because of how big the outfield is. His XBA, his X homers on StatCast is 25, so a little unlucky there. And he's so young still. He's so fast. His XBA is 296. He scored 125 runs last year, Witt did. He's 25 now. I think he's pretty bankable for that five category production. And I think he bounces back at homers next year.
Yeah, I had Witt at 7, but it's just because I like some other guys more so. I still think he's great. I think you're good for like 40 steals, great batting average, everything you said. And if he bounces back in power, then he deserves to probably go third also. Like the reason I love this exercise already is after Shohei and Judge, there are a lot of arguments to be made for like 3 through 8. Mm-hmm. Like you could really, you're going to go into some drafts, like I'll do so many that I guarantee you they'll be so different across the board. Because of like some people might throw a pitcher in, which we might like. There's so many angles to these. Like someone's you're gonna be in a draft somewhere, Ben, have the 10th pick, and one of these guys is gonna fall to you, and you're gonna be like, "What the heck just happened?" But it will happen in these drafts because there are valid arguments I think for so many of these players, and obviously we're making this argument on September 23rd, which is insane because we're crazy like that. But like I think Witt's very good. I have him at 7. That's because I have other guys up early. I have Acuna 5. You had Acuna 3, but I had J-Ram 3, you had J-Ram 8. Another guy I got ahead of him, obviously, we'll talk about shortly. But I love Witt. I think it's totally fine. I guess just the volatility and the power, which could happen to anybody, is the only reason I kind of push him down a little bit. But it's totally, if you were to fall to me at 6 or 7, I'm like, okay, let's dance. Wouldn't break my heart at all. With that said, who do you have at 6?
I think we're probably in line with the next two guys. I have Carroll 6th.
That's I have Carroll 6 as well. And I wanted to put him so much closer, but people would have told me I was such a freaking homer because I have pounded the Carroll drum for years now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he doubled his barrel rate. He's a 30-30 bat now. The only thing with Carroll is that the average is low, but that's why I'm 6th. For whatever reason, he can't hit for high average right now. You know, he's super fast. It could be like a fly ball thing, but yeah, I think he's like Bobby Witt. Light and we have them right, we have them back to back with each other, so it's they're very comparable players now.
Yep, just went 30-30, third straight year of 100 plus runs scored. If he ever got the RBIs up, some like if they just moved him to third, doesn't be fourth. If they just moved him to third in the order, like the numbers he could put up would be astronomical. So, I love Corbin Carroll. I think we're just seeing the tip of the iceberg. Dude's 24, Ben. 24. That's the other thing. All of these guys are so young, we might not even see the peak of these guys just yet, which is pretty crazy to think about. All right, so I have Witt at 7. Who do you have at 7?
I have J-Rod, Julio Rodriguez.
Okay, I have him 9. But again, okay. I have no problem with this at all. You're getting a 30-30 guy for like 3 straight seasons, so yes.
Yeah, he bounced back nicely this year because I was kind of – because J-Rod was in 15-teamers. He was like a back of the first-round pick, and I think – because he was 4th, I think, going into the previous season when he kind of – Yeah, he went – instead of going 30-30, he went 20-20. And, yeah, the plate discipline isn't the best for J-Rod. His K rate – well, actually, it's more like the chase rate and the walk rate aren't the best for a top-of-the-lineup hitter. But he's 24 still as well. He's going 30-30. Yeah, if you can go 30-30 with that average, it won't hurt you. I think he's definitely a mid-first-rounder.
Yeah, like I said, I have Witt 7. You have J-Rod 7. I have J-Rod 9th. I love J-Rod. No problems. Like I'd probably take him 8th because I just don't take pitching early, but I put Scooble at 8 just thinking ahead to – like because you have J-Rod, I put Scooble 8. Just what I've learned a lot this year, especially doing like my OLAC 15s where I actually was kind of okay, that elite pitcher – I know Toby has banged it in my head for so long, and you're a fan of this also. That elite pitcher in a 15 is just crazy. Like in a 12, that beat Bubba one where I drafted Peralta 9th, I'm still 4th in that league. Like literally a couple fab moves, I'm probably doing a lot better in that league. But in a 15-team league, obviously injuries can happen to any pitcher. But if you can get a guy like Scooble putting up those numbers, he is just as good as probably any of these elite hitters in my book. Like, it does a world to you. So that's where we're drafting the top 15. So we're doing a 15-team first round here. I got Scooble at 8, as I think, you know, you're getting elite strikeouts beyond elite ratios. Like, this is the closest thing to Pedro we've seen. And he's done it back-to-back seasons. It's absolutely crazy. So, yeah, give me Tariq Scooble at 8. And I had J-Rod at 9. So who do you have at 9?
I have Tatis. This is where it started.
Not even tricky. In my top 15.
Yeah, it started getting tricky for me once I got past J-Ram. Yeah, I still trust the talent with Tatis. I know you're very biased because of your fandom
past history.
Yes,
fandom and past history. Yes,
several things. So, but the one thing with Tatis in 2024, he only had 11 steals. This year, he's up to 32, which is a massive gain back to where he used to be. Now, the only thing that's lacking again is the power a little bit. He has 23 homers, 32 steals, 267 average. That's not far off from what Bobby Witt did this year. and we have Witt relatively high. You have Witt 7, I have him 5th. And then looking at the Statcast for Tatis, the barrel rate has dropped. It's still 10%. The xEvo is still elite. His xBA is still 284. His sprint speed is still 83rd percentile. I think he's this is one where I'm not going to – I could easily be argued once I do my own – or I could even switch it once I do my own rankings when that time comes. But just looking now, and I've always been – it's weird. I've always ranked Tatis highly. I just never really draft him. Yeah, I don't know if I get scared or if I just don't want to get the opportunity. Maybe it's both. But I think talent-wise, I'm kind of, this is kind of a rank where I'm expecting a leap a little bit. But if he can go 30-30, I think he can go 30-30 now, which is just what J-Rod did. It's just that he hasn't really done it yet in a while since the suspension.
Yeah, the Tatis thing is the ceiling is ridiculous. Like, he could be a top three player. He could 40-40 is not close to out of the realm for him. He just hasn't done it. For, like, health-wise, he has not been able to put it all together. That's my biggest concern. My first-round pick, I want that stability in there. But I like, if you're going off the numbers like you're going off of, yeah, he checks the boxes to be pretty darn high. There's zero knocking that at all. But, yeah, first one, took 9 picks, not in my top 15. So this is where, like, again, this first round, man, it's not even just like the, it's wide open, it feels like. Because
I don't even know how was my top 15 to rank in half an hour.
Oh, yeah. And I know for a fact mine will change. Mine will probably change by tomorrow morning when I wake up. Like, that's there's a lot of moving and shaking here. So my 9 was J-Rod. Your 9 was Tatis. Who is your 10?
Lindor.
Okay, I have him 13th. Okay. But I love Lindor. Yeah, you know my thoughts on – everyone knows my thoughts on Lindor by now.
Yeah, he's the same argument as J-Rod and even Carroll and Witt, 30-30. A little bit older. Maybe the average isn't there. But he's still young enough. I think Lindor could do it again. So I think he's definitely a first-rounder still. This order is always a question.
Yep, just hit his 29th home run of the season tonight. So you got to love it. All right, for me, this is kind of like, I guess, my Tatis in this one, where he has not really done it, but I believe he can. And that is a 21-year-old Jackson Chourio is my number 10. I'm still a massive believer. He's hitting 272 this year, 20 homers, 18 steals, got some time on the IL. I still believe, like, there's a skill set that shows him being the next Acuna type out there. Tatis type was in that conversation at one point. The 9% barrel is a slight improvement, still a 42% hard hit rate. The X numbers suggest he's been lucky. So that's not a great feeling by any means, but I love the talent. He's super, super young. I know I've always been maybe overexcited on Jackson Chourio than others. I totally get that. I also believe the Brewers team is going to be very good again next year with Yelich and William Contreras, and maybe Turang is legit and so on and so forth. I think Chourio has a whole couple levels we have not seen yet.
Yeah, so he's my first player that I did not rank that you have in your top 15.
Yeah,
so but he is on my list. Yeah. But they're very similar, though. I was going to compare him to Tatis, actually. So, yeah, so Chourio's on my little, like, leftovers pile of the names I did jot down that I just didn't feel like were in my top 15. I'm going to say that Chourio is the younger version of Tatis, where you have him ranked for his potential, but he hasn't quite gotten there yet. He has had 2 years of 2020, so that's great. A little less in steals this year. 272. But the one thing, so I looked at Chourio's Statcast, and there's a lot of blue on it, which he is 21, but I guess like he maybe went backwards in his skills this year. Let me look at the side by side. So actually, well, the barrel rate increased by 1.5, so that's good. The exit velo is a little bit lower than average. The max EV went up. His launch angle is higher. XBA dipped. The walk rate dropped a little bit. That's not really a fantasy concern though. So so. It goes back to the age as well, though, too. Like, he didn't really grow like people were hoping for Chourio to do this year. Yeah. And I would have him in the top of the second round, though. So he's definitely like a turn pick for me. I don't want to have him ahead of guys like I have him ahead of, well, we'll get into the other names too, which are questionable, but I think like Lindor and J-Ram Tatis, they have a little bit more of a track record than Chourio does at this point.
Yeah, so even just talking it out through this exercise, like, I believe he's a top 10 talent. I'm praying I get him in the second round. That's kind of where I know if I'm drafting, that would be the scenario I'd want, most likely.
Yeah. That's me and Acuna. I have him ranked highly, but if I can get him later, then I'll do it.
Agreed. And in that case, who is your number 11?
This is where I have Scooble.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, so I had my 10 hitters, and I go, okay, well, after this, it's kind of a crapshoot. I'll just put Skubal there. Perfect. So he's 11th.
I have Skeens at 11, another elite pitcher. Wins is the only, like, I almost put him as my third SP, not my second, because I don't think wins are changing is the sad part in Pittsburgh. And that's a, like, you can never predict wins, but I feel like if you're taking an elite guy, you're getting the strikeouts, you're getting the ratios, but you'd hope for, you know, double-digit wins here. And it's a challenge. So I have Skubal at 11.
You mean Skeens?
Skeens, sorry. You had Skubal at 11.
Yeah, so pitchers, that's kind of funny. Skeens, so you mentioned it. Skeens is my would be my RP or SP3 if we went far enough.
I almost put Crochet ahead of him, because I'm guessing that's who you took as your SP2.
Yeah, we'll get to Crochet eventually. Okay. Yeah, it's because of the wins.
Yeah, that's all exactly where I have Crochet at 12. I'll just throw it out there now. Like I literally crossed out Crochet's name, but Skeens on my list. Might be some paper here. So who's your 12 and 13? You can go back to back now.
I went back to the Kyle Tucker well at 12.
So you know Tucker from me.
Yeah. So his injury right now is a muscle, but the one last year was fluky. I can't really hold a broken bone on a foul ball. It could happen any pitch, but how often does it really happen though? And he was crushing the ball. He was killing it, Tucker. He was one of the best first round picks until that July, whatever happened. I think he got hurt then. Didn't something happen to him? Like his hand or something?
His hand. He played through a fractured hand or something. Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Yeah, so this will also depend on where he goes, Tucker, a lot. But right now, I think he's still a first-round talent. And then Uncle Ted actually called out my number 13, and this is someone I jotted down. I didn't expect to have him in my first round. But I put Gunnar at 13, Gunnar Henderson.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay.
I was a big Gunnar guy this year. I had him on a couple teams, I think. One was a main event.
You want to elaborate on Gunnar? Let me get my stuff ready. Because he's a guy that I've grown to appreciate more, but I still cannot force myself. You have Lindor projected on 10th on yours, like, and everyone else and their mom has Henderson over Lindor. I'm with you. I'd have one, so I usually just end up taking Lindor. I don't have to worry about it type thing.
Yeah, so Henderson came off of almost 120 run season. He had 37 homers, 21 steals. He had 281, and he had nine. And he had how many RBIs? He had 92 RBIs, and he was 23. So I think the thing with this year is that he had the injury in spring training, and he never really got off to the best start. He ended up stealing more bases, so he has 27 steals now. So if he even goes back to like 30 homers, he has it in him to steal almost 30 bases. So he could be 30-30, and I doubt you're going to have to pay nearly what you paid last year, which was like a 6-round pick for Gunnar. And he's going to hit at the top of the Orioles lineup. Probably would be better next year. Some guys come back. They have some of the young guys improve. And he's going to hit leadoff. I said that twice. It's important, though, to me. And then he's only 24 this year, Gunnar. So he's going to be 25 next year. And this is more of like an injury bounce back at a discount type thing for me. It's also because no one really stood out as an obvious back end of the first rounder. Everyone had their warts at this point. So I figured I liked them last year, and it was just really – or this year, and I think it was his injury that really kind of ruined the season.
Yeah, I could see myself starting to like him more as a second-round pick coming up, just because I started paying more attention to him as the season went on. Okay, he's getting healthy, he's young. Like, I see the appeal. I just love Lindor so much more. So that'd be one of those leagues where someone else likes Lindor and screws me on that, and then I go – because, I don't hold secrets on – I record too many shows to hold secrets, but – my goal is by the end of the second, my second pick, I plan on having Francisco Lindor if I have my way. And it worked a lot this last year, and everyone knew it then. So here you go. Thing is, no one's really worried about me beating them in a league. So they just let me get my guys. But I like Lindor a ton. So I get the Gunner love, though. I get the love. So I had Lindor at 13. I'm already looking at my things. I should probably switch him in Churio at 10 and 13, but we'll get to that.
Who's your 12, Bubba? I don't think I had
12 was 12 was Crochet.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Eats Crochet. That. And this is the other thing, okay? This is where I'm projecting the first round. In my brain, I usually don't take a pitcher in the first round. So, like, in my perfect world, it's probably 15 hitters going. But reality is, you and I both know at least two, if not three, are going in the first round of 15 when all things are said and done. So
same thing with me. I'm the same way, though. I don't think I've taken a pitcher in the first round in a while. So, but I have him ranked there just because that's what the talent is, I think.
Now business picks up. So who do you have at 14?
This one was tough. I actually put Ellie at 14.
Me too. And I wanted everything in my power to not even put him in the top 15, but I had to be realistic with myself.
He was just the potential was better than the other names I thought that I had left on my little like list on the side of my spreadsheet. Like Ellie, he's 20-30 this year, maybe, but it's a down year for him. And he did make gains in strikeouts, I believe, which was always a concern. Some people, notably CBS, they're pretty adamant that he's hurt right now. And he has a great ballpark to hit in. And I think he could bounce back, and he's only 23. So if I can get Ellie at the end of the first round, I think I would take that risk, actually.
Yeah, I'm kind of there. Like, I don't know if I want to take the risk, but I get the risk. Let's put it that way. Because the skill is ridiculous. You mentioned the age for one. He had a moonshot tonight. Absolute bomb tonight. Even on, like, it feels like a really down season, it's still the best batting average of his career at 263. 20 homers, 36 steals. So he's, like, no one in their right mind thought he was stealing 67 bases again. If you did, you're crazy. Let's be honest. But he's improved the K rate. Runs are still there. Most RBI. Like, everything you were saying, that's why I said, I just have to tell myself, okay, get over the bias of the flukiness that he can be. In a roto season, Ben, this guy is a monster. An absolute monster. And he's going to have one season, Ben, where he just breaks the whole thing. He just, like, it might be one year where he can go 50-50 like Shohei, like out of nowhere. And we just go, holy crap, here it is. So that's why I kept him in the top 15. I'm like, he deserves to be in the first round for that potential. And I think you and I can both agree, at least one person in every draft we're in is probably taking him, like, in the top six. Like, someone loves Ellie De La Cruz in every draft. So you and I won't have to make that decision very often. That's the beauty of it. Yep. But if it happens to come to it, okay, this is something I can live with at this point in time.
Yep.
Number 15. Who you got?
I alluded to it earlier, but I have Crochet at 15.
Okay. So two pitchers for you in the top 15.
Yep. Perfect. Crochet 11. Scubel 11, Crochet 15.
I like that better than my pitching. I just put three in there, but in my own way I draft, that makes much more sense. Let's put it that way. Did you want to say anything on Crochet, or are you just good with Crochet?
I just think now, like, I think the workload, he's like any other pitcher now in terms of injury risk and workload. But he has some of the best stuff too. He's a little, he's not quite as good as Skubal in terms of all that, I don't think, without looking at the stats side by side, but the Red Sox should be competitive. He should get a lot of wins again, Crochet. And I'm biased because he's on my two best FAB teams. So, but I think he's deserving of being a turn pick at least.
All right. For me at 15, got to stay on brand. Junior Caminero is the 15th player. If I didn't put him in the first round after everything that went down the last month, we had some problems around here. So I went Caminero at 15. Love the skill set. I know he's going back to Tampa Bay's ballpark. I know all those concerns. Dude's still a beast. Like, the power and everything is the same in both ballparks. The batting average just drops a ton when he's out of Tampa Bay. So, okay, instead of he maybe hits, I still think he's going to hit 250-ish or better no matter where he plays. He's got the 108 RBIs. He's got 7 steals, 44 homers, 91 runs. Like, dude's a monster. I think he's good for, I still think he's good for 40-plus homers. At worst, 35. Maybe he starts stealing more bags, gets you 200 runs in RBIs. Again, third base position, that's, like, he's, to me, he's, if you like Austin Riley, you should like Caminero more, in my opinion. And so I'm a big, big Caminero fan, as everyone should know by now.
Yeah, you definitely made a statement with the meatball draft, and I can't really blame you. This is for me, I don't know what to expect going back to the Trop, and I don't want to put a first-round pick on that much unknown for me. So I love Caminero. He's on my main event. He's on another team. I have him a couple. He was on my home league that finished well. I have him on a few teams. So I love the price of where we got him this year. But since the average, well, his XBA is 270. And I'm not buying the road home splits because as much as they are, because the BABIP is so low on the road or wherever, however it is. Yeah. The BABIP is driving the massive splits. But when you go from George Steinbrenner to Tropicana, that's a big change. And someone mentioned Guerrero, Vlad Jr., going from AAA ballparks back to Toronto. I could see the same thing with Caminero, potentially, where he's still really good, but I think he might be at a loss if you're picking him that high. So it's just that unknown factor of changing the home ballpark for me. That's really keeping him out of the first for me. But he was on my list of names I did have left over.
All right. Let's look real quick to see how it compares. The meatball draft that took place in early August. Here's your first round. Shohei Ohtani. At 2, Aaron Judge. At 3, Bobby Witt Jr. At 4, J-Ram. At 5, Ellie De La Cruz. So there's that going for you. At 6, Scooble. At 7, Corbin Carroll. At 8, Juan Soto. Here's one we didn't discuss. At 9, Kyle Schwarber. At 10, J-Rod. At 11, Jackson Chourio. At 12, Caminero. 13, Skeens. 14, Crochet. And 15 was Gunnar Henderson. So we got most of them. We got most of them. But Schwarbaum wasn't there. Nick Kurtz has been mentioned a million times by Uncle Ted, and he went early second round in the meatball. There's always going to be guys that miss out on this top 15. That's how we draft 27 rounds or 30 rounds in baseball.
Yeah, my five leftovers. So you mentioned – so I had written down 23 names. You mentioned Chourio, Skeens, Caminero as three of the eight. My others were PCA, Vlad, Kurtz, Rowley, and Schwarber.
Okay.
It was more they were like more nods, but I would never put them in the first round though.
And I'm with you. I didn't really have PCA in consideration because I'm just anti that profile, but I get it. I had the other ones. Like, I was like, do you put Rowley? No. Even me, don't do a catcher in the first round. That's just, it's insane. So I'm with you on the Rowley. Kyle Tucker, who you had, I was like, okay, he's probably early second for me now. Kurtz is going to be a massive discussion point as things keep going around. But there's a ton of them. Like, in this draft, Acuna went with the 10th pick in round two.
Fish, right?
Yeah, Fish got Ellie and Acuna back-to-back. That's pretty nice. Lots of ways to go about it. All right, nice little fun exercise to wrap up our 2025 season. Ben, we'll have a lot more 2026 content to come. Eventually, we'll do some projections, analysis, and much more as usual. But before we head out, Ben, any final words for the listeners, for anything you have in mind as we wrap up 2025?
I'm ready to draft now. No, I'm just kidding. But
heck yeah, you're welcome.
You greased the wheel on the way back of my head for 26 drafts.
Start thinking.
No, in all seriousness, though, thanks again, Bubba, for having me on for another season. I always look forward to coming on and talking fantasy baseball, and it's a great time, and I appreciate you wanting me on the show. So thanks again.
Door's always open, my friend. Love having you. It's good stuff. You help out at Bubba and the Bloom, and you help out here. So we all appreciate it in the circle of the fantasy baseball world. So appreciate it. We're rooting for you this week. We're looking forward to seeing the recap on Monday or Tuesday, whenever we get around to it. And playoffs start next week for real baseball, which means NFBC streets are almost open for 2026. Giddy up, boys and girls. But until then, make sure you follow Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. I'm at BDentric. Good luck the rest of your week, everybody. This was Benched with Bubba, episode 784. Catch y'all next time.